Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cara, acne can be tough. Whether your kid is just starting to get breakouts or has been struggling with them for years, there's a great product that can help.
Phyla is the ultimate game changer. It tackles acne right at its root cause, rebalancing the skin's bacteria and packing it with probiotic phages.
Phyla harnesses the superpowers of probiotics, tiny warriors targeting and wiping out the acne-causing bacteria. In studies, Phyla slashed acne-causing bacteria by a whopping 90%.
Phyla doesn't just fix acne you can see. It stops new breakouts in their tracks. It has no harsh chemicals and won't irritate or dry most skin. Phyla's three-step system is like a dermatologist-approved magic potion. Cleanse, apply serum, and moisturize twice a day.
As a special treat for our listeners, you can grab 25% off your first order of Phyla. Head over to phylabiotics.com, enter code PUBERTY at checkout, and kickstart your family's journey to acne-free skin. Check out the link in our show notes for quick access.
Hi, I'm Cara Natterson.
And I'm Vanessa Kroll Bennett.
And we are obsessed with flipping puberty positive.
Puberty is a stage of life best described as a roller coaster of physical and emotional shifts. It happens to literally every human being on earth. And it shouldn't be cringy. It should feel, you know, pretty comfortable.
Which is why we started this podcast and a newsletter, and why we film slightly ridiculous but informative social media videos.
It's why we have a brand that makes clothes that literally feel so comfortable, and why we write books too. Our latest is This Is So Awkward, Modern Puberty Explained.
We have built a universe of puberty positivity, and it all started with this podcast.
We are so happy that you're here. So let's start with the concept of resilience, because it's a little bit like one of those words where everybody uses it so often that you're like, does it actually mean anything anymore? What does it mean, and why is it like so important to you as part of this universe? Do you want me to ask that again?
No, I'm processing that question. I'm thinking, resilience is another buzzword, but it's kind of a big deal because to me, resilience is expressed so beautifully when we think about the small things, about how we respond to minor setbacks, to big stressors, to adversity. And also, it's not just about the person. So I think the reason why resilience is so important, even though people talk about it now, and I think we hear about it a lot, so it does feel like, what does that even mean? I think it's the important component of community. We can't expect resilience in an individual. We can support resilience in an individual. But there's something that I hope changes culturally about like saying you're so resilient. Because that means that if you weren't able to bounce back, that somehow you're not as wonderful of a human being. The expectation sort of puts the blame of some of these terrible environmental stressors on the individual. So I like to think of resilience as this bounce back ability, but in the context of not being resilient, but having skills that underlie and are associated with resilience, and then having a caregiver in your life. That's what the five principles are, by the way. They are highly linked with resilience. And so taken together, that's the stuff that's in our control. We can build some skills in our kids. We can, for ourselves, have relationship, reflection, regulation, rules, and repair, which we'll talk about a little bit. And then there's things that are not in our control at all, which is why I wanted to focus this book on what we can actually do something about and how we can move the needle. But other factors do come into play. So your community, your school, your socioeconomic status, your genetics, like there are things that factor in that we can't control. So the part of the conversation that I like to think about is what can we actually do something about? And the reason resilience comes up so much is because when we think about how our kids feel, we don't ever fantasize that they're going to like laugh and we think, oh, this is going to last forever. We know that it's temporary and it doesn't seem to bother us when it's the more positive feelings. Mm. But when they're experiencing the harder feelings, more challenging feelings, we tend to panic and think that's going to last longer. Mm. And there's something about like wanting desperately for our kids to feel the positives that isn't highly linked with resilience. It's totally natural, but that's why resilience is part of the conversation, because then it's like, it's not about, I just want my kids to be happy and have positive feelings. Of course we do, but we also want them to be able to experience the range of human feelings and know that it's survivable.
Okay. So
you just said like 7,000.
Yeah.
I know. So, sorry.
I want to go down that road, but first I want to back up and ask a very simple clarifying question, which is, do the adults in the situation have to have sort of discovered their own resilience first in order to help raise resilient kids? Do you have to put on your own resilience life vest first?
I mean, you have a better shot at it for sure. Because when we work on skills ourselves, you know, it's like self-regulation is highly linked with resilience. And it's also when your parent or your caregiver has really worked on that muscle, you, the child, are more likely to have so much exposure to and co-regulation with the caregiver that you develop that skill. And so, yeah.
So the modeling piece
it's big.
Is big. But what if you're not? What if you look in the mirror and you're honest with yourself and you're like, and remembering that it's not about being resilient, but about sort of that, I love that, the community around you and the opportunity for resilience. But let's say it's a particularly tough moment in someone's life and they know they don't have it within them. How do they still model for the kids around them when they can't pull it out for themselves? Is there a path?
Well, I think that that speaks to two things to me. One is, let's say you are going through something tough. Having an appropriate feeling to that experience is not being resilient. It's just, you know, let's say you lost a close family member and so you're struggling.
Yeah, let's do a scenario.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a, right, we're the sandwich generation. We have aging parents and kids.
Yeah.
Let's say... we're obviously not aging, but everybody else is around us. I have a parent who's not well, and I'm managing that and feeling really down about it and super appropriate, right? But not functioning in the way I might function ordinarily. What is the messaging to my kid? Now, I'm not talking about a two-year-old. I'm talking about, you know, a grade school kid or a middle school or a high school kid. What is the messaging with respect to like appropriate emotions, right? The right reaction to a given situation versus like, you got to get on with life and be able to function and bounce back. How would you script that?
I mean, I think one thing is naming our affective state instead of having the kids around us guess our affective state. So if you're struggling, just say, not listen, five-year-olds, I need you to take care of me. That would be not ideal. But if it's, you might have noticed that I've been feeling a little sad and that's because grandma's sick and it's been hard. And also, I love you and I can take care of me when I'm sad and I can take care of you when I'm sad. Do you have any questions? That kind of, I mean, not that.
So talk us through what you're doing when in that script, because it's very deliberate and conscious what you're messaging to a kid.
The messaging, in whatever way you want to say it, is I don't want you to wonder what's happening. Clearly something is different. So I'm going to name it for you. And I don't want you to be afraid that feelings are dangerous. So I'm going to name that for you. And I don't want you to be afraid that when I have different feelings other than joy, I'm not able to take care of you. So I'm going to name that for you. And resilience, like big picture, we bounce back from the hard stuff, even when it's really hard and there are times when we can't get out of bed and we feel really sad or we do feel, you know, like it's just too much. But just explaining what's going on does wonders. And just thinking consciously, like, how am I? When I say I can take care of me through this and I can take care of you, how am I doing that? So that's our work. Like, okay, if I'm going to say that to my kid, what are three things I've done today to take care of myself?
And do you name that for the kid?
I mean, I think...
are you like...
If you
mommy actually got out of her pajamas today.
Yeah. I took a shower, got dressed, took a walk because getting outside really helps me. And now I'm here to sit with you and we're going to work on whatever it is.
And now we're going to microwave some mac and cheese.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's critical to teach language in that way, right? So it's in parallel, you're formulating your own list and you are modeling for a kid exactly the skill they need in order to get themselves out of sticky situations, and particularly around feelings, right? So if you're feeling sad, to say the word sad, but there are so many other words that you can choose, right? And so just to use words intentionally, because we ask them to do that for themselves, and they don't have the language until they're, you know, many of them until they're well through 80. Grade schools and grade school or 80. Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the five principles as the foundation for us to talk about resilience. Because I want people to read the book, but I also want you to ground us in this foundation. And then we can go deeper on the topic of resilience.
Okay, so I chose five principles that are rooted in science and that are in our control. And so they are the five core principles rooted in science that move the needle on resilience that we actually have control over. And there are words just for memory purposes, but the literature uses many different words. For example, relationship, you might see in studies, sensitive caregiving, you might see attunement, you might see connection. It's like the umbrella of this relationship. But we also know that kids can experience such a range of challenges. And when they have a close connected relationship, that buffers the impact of the harmful challenges. And in the context of resilience, in fact, a lot of those challenges with the close relationship end up bolstering resilience. So it's a big deal. But what I love about it is it's absolutely in our control, because I don't like imposing on parents more things that are not available to us and not free and not in our control.
And by the way, the caregiving adult does not need to be a parent.
Not at all. It's one caregiver with whom a child feels that safety and security.
Do you want to walk through the five R's?
So relationships is one.
Reflection. Reflection, I mean, it's a couple of things, but pausing is incredibly powerful and it seems so minor that I think it gets rejected a lot. Like that breath, that pause maybe isn't worth the time. It really is. And reflection is also thinking about what you need and what your child needs and thinking about what your experience was being parented and thinking about how that might impact all of these things. Now, of course, as we're walking through the day, we're not going to have a long sit down with ourselves and go through all of that reflection. Sometimes we're just pausing before we act. And in that pause, we have space to reflect on how we want to respond to our kids and to what's going on, which is what leads to regulation.
Wait, but
I just want to zip through it.
No. What was the word for pausing? Reflection.
Reflection.
Yeah.
Thank God you did an R. Who here today had a reaction to something their kid did or this week? And this reaction is outsized to what is happening here. Like, who freaked out about something? And you're like, why am I freaking out about this? This is actually not that big of a deal, right? So to Aliza's point, like, that's a moment where you pause and you reflect, why am I reacting this way? Is it because of something that happened or didn't happen when I was a kid? Is it because I'm stressed? Is it because I haven't gotten enough sleep? Whatever it is, but that reflection is about all the crap we're carrying into the business of caring for our kids. Like Cara and I talk all the time about leaving your baggage at the door. That is reflection. That is the job of the adult, is to recognize all of the ingredients coming into the interaction.
And you don't even have to fully reflect. You don't even have to stop and ask yourself the question. Really, the first step is just, it's like that count to 10, take a breath, tactical approach. This is just the sort of cerebral way of framing those very smart tactical strategies of cooling down, mm-hmm. right? And letting the messages just simmer down in your brain so that you can act in, I mean, maybe a better way, not always.
I think it's freedom. It's mm-hmm. just freedom to act by choice instead of
react.
And also, just as a side note, not everything, like if you have a two-year-old at home and you snapped, maybe not a two-year-old because they're really like—
They're adorable, they're like a three-year-old. Really,
like a three or four-year-old.
And yeah, whoever coined terrible twos is like—
No, terrible twos doesn't
totally
exist,
into alliteration. Three was hard.
Horrible.
But
I mean, they're adorable, but—
There are times when the reason why you're annoyed is because it's annoying.
Right. It's not always about like your childhood and
it
your
also
stuff.
Happens at 13. Yeah. Let's just be
I just want to say that because I want to be realistic.
My mom once said to me, she was like, I mean, who wants to get on the floor and play? This is the mother of four children. I mean, it's like, oh, it's so irritating. I just need it. I was like, when did it get fun? She was like, when you were in college. So yeah, sometimes it's annoying. But when we think about the demographic we work with most, which is our tweens and teens, there is a lot of baggage going into our reactions to those things. And so we're reflecting. Okay, so now we move to regulation.
Can I just say to that point, though, there's a lot of baggage as kids get older because we can remember our own lived experiences when we were that age. We are protected by the fact that when kids are really, really young, we don't actually remember what our lived experiences were at that age. And so—
How poorly our parents parented us at that age.
Correct. Or even like just our out of controlness, right? Or whatever it was, that thing that makes you cringe about yourself. You don't remember that about your two-year-old self, but you remember it about your 12-year-old self. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's a buffer that people can lean into. Mm-hmm.
Cara, lately I have been lying awake at night. I'm physically exhausted, but I can't sleep because my mind is so wired with everything going on between work and my family. So I've added Magnesium Breakthrough to my nightly routine, and it actually helps calm my mind. It helps me get better sleep, and I wake up feeling better rested. I'm less cranky, and I'm more patient with my family and with you.
Oh, I've noticed. And it's because unlike other magnesium supplements that might give one or two formulations of magnesium, Magnesium Breakthrough has seven. That's why you're sleeping so well and waking up refreshed. Now, dietary supplementation is always best, Vanessa. So that means eating your minerals and vitamins is the best way to get them in. But if you can't or you don't get enough, Magnesium Breakthrough is the way to go. It can also help digestion, though too much helps your digestion too much, which is not a good thing. It can support muscle recovery, so bye-bye, Charlie horses. And it helps build dense bones, which is especially important for women approaching and in menopause.
We have an exclusive offer for our listeners. You can go to buyoptimizers.com/puberty, buyoptimizers.com/puberty. And you can use the code PUBERTY10 during checkout to save 10%. That promo code is PUBERTY10 at buyoptimizers.com/puberty. Your body and brain and family and business partner will thank you.
Vanessa, we literally have 3 minutes to eat lunch every day. I am not joking. And the challenge is how to make it delicious and healthy and still fit into that tiny window. Our answer is Factor's ready-to-eat meals. They have been a godsend.
We throw our Factor meals in the microwave. It takes 2 minutes and out comes a gorgeous, fresh, never frozen meal. We both love the tamale vegetarian one. It's delish. There's a ton of options every week. There's 60 add-ons, breakfast, snacks, beverages. I love doing the wellness shots with my kids. They think it's hilarious, and I know they're getting vitamins and minerals in their bodies.
So get meals on your table or at your desk in 2 minutes or less. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning. You can customize with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can press pause or reschedule depending upon your lifestyle.
So to order, go to factormeals.com/puberty50 and use the code puberty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That code is puberty50 at factormeals.com/puberty50 to get 50% off your first box, 20% off your next box. And I am going to go do that right now because I need more Factor meals in my refrigerator.
Cara, my kids love Magic Spoon cereal. And even though it's cereal, they actually love it as a homework snack. The variety pack has four flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. And fruity is the favorite flavor in my house.
Now, this pack has 0 grams of sugar, between 13 and 14 grams of protein, and between 4 and 5 grams of net carbs per serving. It's made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and it's high in protein, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So a great choice, Vanessa.
You can go to magicspoon.com/puberty to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our, you guessed it, promo code puberty at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident you're going to love their product. It's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they will refund your money. No questions asked. They do not want you to send their cereal back to them.
Try a bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/puberty and use the code puberty to save $5.
Regulation.
I'm going to regulation now. Regulation, to me, in this context, if we're talking about the three-year-old, for example, regulation, the reason I say regulation, first of all, it's an R word, but I mean both self-regulation and co-regulation. Right. Because we do have to realize that our children do borrow our nervous system. And I don't say that to make people afraid or to make anyone feel guilty, but just imagining that we have capacity to share a more mature nervous system. So it's easy to think about when you think of a newborn and they're crying and you just hold them and you see that you're soothing in that moment and your ability to know sort of that everything is okay, but they just need a little snuggle. That is it's co-regulation that feels very clear.
So let's take a scenario when you can't necessarily pick them up and rub their back and get them to
calm down, physical proximity. And co-regulation means something different.
Okay, you pick a kid up from preschool and they are just a mess. And you go to hug them and they're like, I mean, they wouldn't say it this way, but they're like,
say it.
Don't touch me. Don't you touch me. It doesn't sound like that.
It just feels like that.
But they're flipping out and you're exhausted. You just like rush from work to have special time and it's a disaster. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the teenagers in a second. What do we do with the four-year-old who's just melting down?
Well, I mean, the first thing and what saves us in as many moments as we can, and for all of this, we want to think about more often than not, versus we're going to be regulated all the time. That's ridiculous. Or it's unattainable. So go for more often than not. But more often than not, if you are going to this pickup and your child is melting down in front of you, if you can remind yourself to breathe and just, you know, I feel like, how do I not repeat myself and say, you know, I'm not being chased by a bear, but I'm not being chased by a bear. I'm not being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. My child is safe. Whatever you need to say in your head to make sure that your inside doesn't have the emergency button, you know, like you're not as scared and not feeling threatened so that you can just see they're feeling threatened. Mm-hmm. They're scared. They're angry. They're you know, overwhelmed, overstimulated, whatever it is, but that you have capacity to take a breath and know that they're safe and they're just having a hard time. So even if they don't want you near them, you've done so much by not matching their state. So it goes far. You might then be able to, you know, as that's why relationships are so important. You get to know your kids and what serves them. For some kids, it's as simple as, I know what's going on inside of them and it's hunger and exhaustion. So I always am bringing a snack, but I'm doing so in a state that is not like a zombie and not like, it's all fine, but it's more, you actually are just reminding yourself, there's no emergency here. I have adult bandwidth to know there's no emergency. And so, no, we can't cuddle right now. This child is not interested in that, and forcing that would be not, I mean, go try it and see what happens. But that you're regulating yourself. And in doing so, you are co-regulating.
So in other words, you're not making it about you. That's the other flip side to that coin, right? Like sometimes it feels very personal when your kid won't let you hug them into co-regulation.
Yes.
And it is not personal.
No. I was thinking about just even when I have one daughter who does, she's not a morning person. And when I walk into her room, I'm the most annoying morning person.
Because you're a golden retriever.
I am. And so I just pop in the room and I'm like, woo! And every time I get just the same sort of, you know, just so rejected, I don't care at all. I'm just like, this is not a me thing. This is just kind of our little dance in the morning. And if I took it seriously and personally, I'd already start the day in battle. But I'm just like, I definitely wanted to pop in because it's a bit past when I thought this human would be ready and we do need to leave. But it's not worth getting myself into like a personal mess over this.
Have you noticed, like I have a different strategy for waking up each of my kids. Like everybody needs a different, and some of them, I don't even go into their room. It's a knock on the door and it's like a conversation through the door. One needs like 10 minutes of conversation on the side of the bed. The other one's like up and at them. I mean, one doesn't live at home anymore, but it's like, to me, it's representative of how the temperament, everybody needs something different. Okay. So regulation, we won't do the older kid example on regulation now, because we'll get to that. What's the next R?
Rules, which is very unpopular right now.
Not for me.
Not for me.
I love rules.
Kids love rules. They feel safe.
Yeah. And I know rules sounds very authoritarian, and obviously it's not, because that would mean there isn't also relationship. But it was just an R word for boundaries and limits. First, I think it's super important to figure out what rules you can keep, like what boundaries and limits you actually can keep. Because if you aren't able to, and you keep, you know, when you get pushed, you keep moving, it probably means it's not that important to you and you should revisit it, because it's going to be much more effective and clear to have boundaries that you care about. So if you absolutely, this is for older kids, this is for teenagers, hopefully, let's say you know phones should not be in the room at night and you're certain of that and you are absolutely clear that that is important to you and what's best for your kid because sleep matters. Then when you get all the pushback in the world, you can be empathetic, but you don't change.
Right. You can be resolute because you're like, I know how important this is.
You know, rules come from like what is going to keep you emotionally and physically safe. And it's going to be different if you're 3 versus 13, but it's still, I have to make a decision as a parent or caregiver, what matters to me most and how can I be clear about what I expect so that this human knows the boundaries and the limits. And then the rest of the stuff you can be relaxed about because you've been super clear.
But it's exhausting. I mean, let's be totally honest. Sticking to rules is exhausting.
Yeah. Although sticking to rules engenders conversation. It really is. Kids will begin to negotiate around rules. And those are incredible springboards for conversation. Sometimes they'll change our mind. Like my kids have definitely changed my mind about certain rules. Most of the time they don't change my mind, but we're in conversation mm-hmm. and I'm hearing about their life and they're hearing about my philosophy. So, I think maybe that's why it's so exhausting, because they negotiate.
Well, I mean, also, I just now ask my kids, like my starting point is asking them what they think the rules should be.
That is a phenomenal way of doing it.
Right. But the funny thing is they always come up with stricter rules uh-huh. than I would have.
That is why it's phenomenal.
And then I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, is this a negotiating tactic? Are they doing this because they want me to like go easier on them?
If you're there are certain things we can't collaborate on. There are certain things that are just going to be in your household, part of your family values that just right. is a non-negotiable. But there are certain things that are changing either for developmental reasons or because you really didn't think about it the way that they framed it and now you're interested in shifting. But I think of that more as like a freedoms list. What are the things that you kind of wish you had a little bit more freedom about? And what do you feel like when do my rules feel confining?
Oh, that's a really interesting way to frame it.
Let's use the example of technology, because mm-hmm. technology is a demon at every age, right? So if you've got a younger kid, a grade school kid, who has trouble getting off of devices, games, iPad, whatever it is, and really hits that point where it's a battle every single time, and you say the limit is X amount of time, and every time you hit the limit, mm-hmm. and then it's just, a war. And they want to negotiate for more time. And you, as the caretaker, know more time, more battles. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how to lean into a rule like that, that you know is right. But the pushback you get is everyone else is on it. Mm-hmm. Everyone else talks about it. Everyone's online right now. Everyone, right? Walk us through that one.
Okay. Well, first, I would say, whenever you're clear about a rule, if it's going to change, it's not changing in the moment. And so you can say, I hear that you want to talk about this and maybe we want to make some adjustments. We're not doing that now because it's in the heat of the moment, but we can set aside some time to have a family discussion about it and we'll see what happens. But that's different than in the heat of the moment. In the heat of the moment, it is what it is. And separately, when you have a kid who's really struggling with a rule, then sometimes it's time to step like mm-hmm. a little further back and say, this, maybe you're not ready for this. And maybe I was, too quick to think you and I were ready for this. So we're going to take a break. So it really
But also maybe not to be said in the moment.
Nothing to be said in the moment. Totally. Mm-hmm. In the moment, nothing good happens by coming up with a new plan, by coming up with mm-hmm. a new rule, by coming up with a change, or by saying something that you're going to later regret just to get whatever outcome you want. And so a lot of that is just our getting a little bit more comfortable seeing the reasonable and manageable distress as not dangerous. Because really, what we're saying when we get that pushback is we've probably all heard this or said this at some point, like, this child won't let me do X. And that's when you have to say, I think maybe something's up here, because I am the adult. Mm-hmm. And it's not about power. It's just about relationship and rules coming together to make sense. And your role in that relationship, when it starts to feel like you're chasing the feeling or you're chasing the rule, something about that dynamic of I, the adult, am not able to make this decision means there's something going on. Like, then you go back to reflection. Mm-hmm. Like, why did I just say my child won't let me do anything?
Can you talk people through that? Because I think there's this feeling that even a little distress in today's world is terrifying.
Yes. And actually, part of that is the fault of my developmental psychologists and folks in adjacent fields and all the conversation. And we talk about sensitive caregiving and how important it is and how, toxic stress is so terrible. And if you're not defining those things, it is confusing. Mm-hmm. So I understand that if you hear stress is really bad, cortisol floods the brain and causes lifelong problems and health problems decades later, well, then when you see your child being really distressed about when you're wanting to take away the iPad, I understand that the instinct might be, this is bad. Mm-hmm. But that's not the stress researchers were talking about when they talked about stress being harmful. Right. And so that's one thing. And that's just a misunderstanding that has gotten, I think, off track. Plus, it's very hard naturally. Of course it's hard. We love these kids. If you're working with kids or raising kids or in a conversation with a kid, it's probably not because you're indifferent about them. And so it makes sense that it hurts you to see them in distress. But if we can help them understand that that feeling is actually a very safe and going to happen again many, many times in life kind of feeling, and that the important thing is learning that you can survive that feeling, we're building resilience. And we can't do that if we don't allow the distress.
So we just have to do the fifth R and then we're going to keep going on resilience. And I want to talk about trauma in a minute, but can we just, what the hell is the fifth R?
Repair.
Oh, yeah.
The one that makes it all just feel like it's going to be okay.
Oh.
Because it's a beautiful part of the developmental research. Repair is so, it's so important and it's such a real thing. And repair to me is reconnection. If you think about repair as something is broken and we're fixing it, then it's much scarier. And I think of like a plate shattering and put back together and then you see all the cracks. And yes, it's a great Leonard Cohen song and beautiful. And we have, you know, so much character, but I don't think that feels good when you're thinking about your relationship with your kid as like a broken thing that's
right.
glued together. But I do think if you think of the muscle that's getting like little tears when you're weightlifting and then your muscle grows stronger, that that's what's happening in your relationship with your child.
You do a lot of weightlifting. Yeah.
Allegedly, that is what happens when you work out your muscles.
I want to talk about that on the path to talking about resilience. Mm-hmm. So we talk all the time about do-overs because people caring for, you know, tweens and teens are going to screw up like on a daily basis, if not more. And when you're parenting younger kids and they're, you know, pushing you to your limit, you're going to screw up in different ways. Mm-hmm. Repair, I know, sounds different when you're speaking to different age kids, but what is the underlying, what I love about it is not only is the plate broken and put back together, but the plate is actually stronger and more beautiful than it was before you broke it.
Right, which is why I don't think of it as broken, why I don't even like to think of the plate because—
What's the Japanese art where they take the fragments? Does anybody know what that's called?
I mean, I've seen it.
Where you put the fragments back together and you use gold to put them back to, and it's like this beautiful, anyways, anyone Google it, you can let us know.
But yes, I think that the most important thing we've learned about repair is that it is not just something to do when we disconnect, but it is essential to resilience. It is essential to healthy relationships. So if you don't have the discord, you don't have the strength of the relationship. To me, it's also you can't be perfect because it would be terrible for your kids.
Because
they would not grow, that relationship would not have the strength of foundation.
So meaning the veneer of perfection.
Yes, and also just because parents push themselves to be perfect, which is so developmentally appropriate. Like, of course.
Right.
Of course.
Because they're trying to be their best self, although we all try and none of us will get there. But like this idea, like the Martha Stewart veneer of perfection that was so predominant when we were all growing up, right, is not the goal now.
By the way, this research is also about romantic relationships.
Right.
It's not just parent-child relationships. We need to know that the messier, rocky roads doesn't mean that there's any risk of losing the relationship.
Right. And in fact, that you risk not building a stronger, deeper relationship if you don't allow these very real things to bubble to the surface and these tensions to happen and these discords to occur.
Exactly. And
I feel so much better.
That is the strength of the relationship. And so we know that it's really important. And it's not just like selling parents and caregivers like something warm and fuzzy to feel good about. It's the science. And so we have to have these mistakes.
I will say that Vanessa and I often talk about bigger kids, bigger problems. And as they get bigger and older, and the problems really do amplify, when the groundwork is laid for repair, it is the most incredible thing to actually be able to lean into that skill and to watch them lean into that skill, because it does get hard, whether it's inside the house, socially at school, you know, in a romantic relationship. And this is a muscle you do want them to exercise starting when they're young.
Yes. And just for clarifying purposes, we're not talking about stretching to snap or like break. We're not talking about repair of something that is, you know, I guess to go back to the muscle building that I do.
Clearly.
Yeah. It's that you want to work out an appropriate amount so that there's an appropriate amount of tiny little tears, but not, I just broke my arm and now I have a, you know, it's a break that is so, so hard to repair. So these are small repairs and they're not about like trauma that is about abuse and neglect or anything like that, just in case that crossed anyone's mind. But I do want to say that the connection that you have, the reconnection that you get every time, it really does build this strong foundation. And I had a moment, I'm not sure that I should repeat this, but I guess I am. I had a moment in my own parenting where I don't get super, like my Achilles heel is not screaming at my kids, which is not to say that I don't have many, but that's not the thing that really gets me when I'm pushed. I don't tend to scream. I laid into my oldest recently in a way that really shook me and it shook her. And I kind of stormed into my room and then I went through my whole shame spiral of like, how could I, of all people, be so horrible?
And then, children.
Yeah. And then I felt terrible and I was like, I'm a sham. This repair is bull.
Everyone burn your book.
Yeah. Like this is all nonsense. I've ruined her. This is the moment where in like 10 years, in 20 years, she's going to be like, that was the moment where it just ended with my mother.
I realized I hated my mother.
I have so many of those moments where I think it's the moment.
This is it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then before I even had time to walk back over, my teenager came into my room and she got on my bed and she was like, bet you're feeling pretty bad right now. And I was just like, oh my God, it's not a sham. Like
it's not
it's real. And we ended up having maybe 2 minutes about the thing. And then she just was chatting and yapping at me and we were back.
I laid into one of my kids at the dinner table and then like within 10 seconds was like, that was an awful thing to do. And I looked at her and I said, I am so sorry. I don't know where that came from. That was terrible. I'm really sorry. And she goes, well, Mom, that was your fastest do-over ever. Congratulations. And like, yes, she mocked me. Fair enough.
But you're connected.
But
that's all that matters.
We're connected. And I modeled for her, A, that you can screw up and come back from it. But B, I demonstrated to her she could withstand the discomfort of me being, sorry, an asshole. And then I dealt with it, she dealt with it, and we moved on. She knew, oh, I can survive this, and I can. And you talk about this beautifully in the book, so I'm not going to regurgitate what you say better than I can. But for those of you who lost it with a kid this week and you're beating yourself up, just remember, it's actually creating, I mean, assuming you actually went back and like dealt with it instead of just sitting in your shame spiral and taking a sad nap, it actually strengthens the relationship and it's modeling for them. And so all of that, it doesn't lessen your standing in your kid's eyes. It actually elevates you and elevates the relationship. Can you spend a second just differentiating for us about trauma and resilience, just so people understand the distinction?
Okay. So like if you think about resilience, there's the smaller stuff. Like you don't want your kid to blow up at the Starbucks barista because the order was wrong, right? So sometimes it's not about like big things like bouncing back, but it's just having the capacity to be disappointed and move along. But then when really big events happen that I don't even want to say a specific event because it can be so upsetting. Mm-hmm. But when you think of toxic stress, when you think of trauma and you think about kids experiencing something where it is so unimaginable and they really are flooded with cortisol, which is a stress hormone, and there is no way to come down from it, much of the time, because we really are wired for resilience, much of the time, the presence of the adult is a huge buffer. And then we can focus on the presence of a loving and safe adult in the context of things that we're not talking about today. And so the reason that's worth thinking about is simply to remember, and I'm using one way of talking about this. You know, there are different ways of talking about this, but if you're talking about it through the lens of positive, tolerable, and toxic stress, even toxic stress in the presence of that loving caregiver can move to the category of tolerable stress. So it's worth thinking about in terms of resilience building. You're not wishing toxic stress to build resilience. That's the thing to be clear about. You're not hoping for trauma to build resilience. Having said that, when bad stuff happens in the presence of loving support, kids really can bounce back. And it's incredibly beautiful. So the positive stressors, not meaning like, yay, something stressful happened, but just stressors that are necessary and part of the day-to-day of being a person, we don't even have to worry about those. We don't have to spend 2 seconds on those. You don't even have to make repairs. You can, but you don't have to in order to impact your child's overall well-being and resilience. But I just think that it's important to acknowledge because we get so stressed out about the range of stressors that can come upon anyone. And the value of having a close connected relationship is just in your mind thinking about, we can do this. Like, we can get through anything. I hope nobody has to get through a lot of things, but we can't undervalue that we have this close connected adult present for a child.
And this distinction is so important because the headlines that you read are often about studies that are done looking at kids who have adverse childhood experiences.
Exactly.
ACEs. These are those macro traumas. And very sadly, there's a very long list of them. But that's when you read data and headlines, that's what you're hearing about often. You're not hearing about a kid who left his lunch at home and has to figure it out at school, right?
But yes, and even with ACEs, for example, I think this is very heartening, but this is just my reframe of ACEs. And it might be, maybe this is too in the weeds, but even those experiences, we're talking about when you have cumulative.
That's right.
So it's like not one, not even two, but three. Now we've got an impact on life outcomes, like health outcomes later.
That's right.
But as sad as that is, it's also incredible to see mm-hmm. how much we can get through.
That's right.
I want to end with gratitude because you talk about the importance of gratitude and building resilience. Some of us may have uttered the words at some point this week, you ungrateful little, I won't use the profanity. Do you know how hard I worked to buy you that? Do you know how difficult it was for me to take off time from work to get here? Do you know, insert just totally furious, upset, frustration, and shame that maybe you're raising a terrible person and you didn't think you were going to raise a terrible person. But we're not raising terrible people. Gratitude is a process and an evolution, and it's a critical part of resilience. Mm-hmm. What does it look like to teach kids gratitude, right? We've got parents of little kids and biggers and even bigger. What does that progression look like?
Well, if you just imagine that no matter what's going on, hunting for the good is always going to be beneficial, whether you're a toddler or a teenager, and also that you don't want to hunt for the good after someone says something was really rotten. So it's not like, I'm going to tell you about how sad I am, and then the other person is going to say, but look how great you have it in these other ways. It's not about denying the negative.
Because it invalidates.
Yeah, but it's just about making sure that you take time each day to practice gratitude, to practice noticing and hunting for the stuff that is good and is working. And so with little kids, it's so easy to do small traditions like rosebud and thorn. And actually, one of my clients added feather, which is something What's that feather? Made you laugh. So rosebud and thorn, I have no idea who originally
it's so good.
Came up with that activity. But it's, you know, sometime in the day as a ritual, or you can do it once a week if that's easier.
So rose is something good that happened. Mm-hmm. Thorn is something less good. And bud is something you're looking forward to.
Right. And feather is something that made you laugh. And so what it is with little kids, it's just a practice of noticing your day in a different kind of way. And in little kids, it might be they were really, like their rose was that they got sprinkles.
Totally. Graham crackers for snack. When?
It doesn't matter. And there's no judgment of what we're grateful for because it's going to look different to everybody. I mean, one thing that you hear all the time is like, I took my kids on this incredible trip where we did all this amazing stuff and I asked them what their favorite thing was. And it was the, you know, getting candy at the airport or something, which feels very depressing.
Next time, just go to the airport, buy the candy and go home.
But I think practicing gratitude and having developmentally appropriate expectations. And also remembering that we don't get to choose what someone is grateful for or what anybody feels. All we can do is model hunting for something that's good and practicing exercising that muscle.
It's also kind of amazing when you hear very simple answers to the rose question.
Oh, so
it,
amazing.
Right? Because it makes you stop and think, I don't have to think so hard about what I'm grateful for. I can pick something very concrete and simple. It's really wild.
So I have one practice in this book that is a riff off of a Ram Dass practice that's really interesting to do with young people. And it's something we can just do with ourselves. But you essentially ask the same question over and over. And you're meant to take turns, but it's interesting when you do that with kids, they don't necessarily care about your version.
But no. Do you guys find that? It's like, everybody goes around the table and then no one cares what
your rosebud and thorn is like, not relevant.
All right, let's go clean up. And you're like, I didn't go yet. And they're like, oh yeah, we don't care.
But this is something you could do traveling in the car, whatever, but it may not, just to manage expectations, you might not be asked to do it as well. But you ask the same question over and over.
So what's an example?
So I'll just do it with you.
Yeah.
And people can think in their heads the answer. But I'm going to ask you the same question. And then the only rule is that you give a different answer each time.
Okay, I'm nervous. Go ahead.
What makes you happy?
You.
Hello.
Sometimes, Kara.
What makes you happy?
Kara, sorry. Kara. Does it count if the person is prompting you to answer? No.
It does not count, but it's sweet.
Kara makes me happy. Okay.
Okay, what makes you happy?
Chocolate ice cream.
What makes you happy?
Going for a walk.
What makes you happy?
Watching a good TV show.
What makes you happy?
Being by myself.
What makes you happy?
Reading a good book.
What makes you happy?
Going to bed at night at a reasonable hour.
What makes you happy?
Being with people I love. That's so beautiful.
I'm like, no, we'll keep
going. No, you're like, we're going to keep going until you run out of things.
So the original exercise was meant to go for like 4 minutes and then the other person asks. And it's a lot. But I would not recommend that unless you have incredibly, first of all, older kids who are freakishly
8 minutes in a locked car.
Yeah. But just practicing that, and you're hunting, because after the first few, you have to kind of think for a second, but it's such a nice feeling to realize how many things make you happy. So it's just a practice.
But again, this is not to be done when a kid comes home having had a terrible day at school and they're like looking to unload. Right.
And you're like, let's,
and
okay,
you're like, what makes you happy? And they're like, not you, go away. So when do you do that, like later that night when you're putting them to bed?
Yes, you can do it as a practice and, you know, en route somewhere. You can do it as a bedtime practice. You can do it at dinner. Like, it doesn't really matter because the reality is that we're all trying to get through the day in whatever way we can. Do I love if you have time to sit down and say, we're doing a daily mindfulness practice and here's what we're doing? Sure, that would be awesome, but that is not as realistic in hurried family life. And so wherever you can find the time, but a bedtime routine is a wonderful time to do it.
I just want to thank Aliza for coming and being here. And I just want to say, like, you're doing God's work here. So thank you.
Jeez.
It's true.
Likewise. Thank you.
We absolutely love hearing your feedback and getting all your questions. So anytime you want to be in touch, email us at thepubertypodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for great puberty products, like the Oom shorts or the Oom socks or the Oom bra, you get the theme there, go to myoomla.com. If you want more content, you love what we do on the Puberty Podcast, and you want to have us come speak or learn more about our book or subscribe to our amazing newsletter, The Awkward Roller Coaster, go to orderofmagnitude.co. Remember, it's .co because we don't have enough money to buy .com. Yet.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.